And now, live from Level 5 Productions on the island of Milleronia, it's the Larry Miller Show! Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who loves a big Christmas party. Hi, folks, and welcome back to the Larry Miller Show. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And boy, oh boy, Colonel Jeff and I were just made extra happy from our theme song again because we, for the first time, Colonel Jeff pointed out, the guy on cymbals does a very good job. You really notice things with music that you never noticed before. And so we were both giggling to beat the band, so to speak. And, boy, I love that theme, and it's just great to be back here on Milleronia, by the way. It's gorgeous today. Yes, I know I control the weather, but it's still beautiful and worth pointing out. And this is a great time of year, you know, to come back at holiday time near the end of the year and, well, to get gifts and wrap them and to see all the citizens here that I like very much. I care about them very much, and, of course, they adore me. Because I am the Miller from Milleronia. But you know what? In all honesty, folks, it's a great place to be for the holidays. And we have great, great shows we put on, plays in the park. And, oh, it's awfully nice. And all the children at school put on their plays, too. And all the parents go because it's the law. But, of course, we all go there. And I'll be honest, you know, that this time of year, we happen to have, well, a dozen volcano sentences and trips to be made. And the people begin to say, well, Larry, you know, we'd like you here for all the volcano executions. And I said, you know what, they're right. And it's, in fact, not a dozen. It's a baker's dozen of volcano trips, and all of them, well, not all, let's see, seven of them are to volcano number one, and five are to volcano number two, which is, well, it's much worse. And, you know, we decided to have, I decided to make it, you know, the unveiling, so to speak, of volcano number three. So that 13th fella is very loyal citizen of Milleronia, and to be honest, just entre nous, it's, he didn't do anything that bad, but, well, everyone wanted to see Volcano Number 3 work, and, I'm not even sure what we're gonna do yet, and I'm whispering, because I don't want him to hear, but, he's a good sport for doing this. I don't think he knows quite yet what it means, but he will soon enough. In any case, it's great to be back, and oh, the music makes me feel so good. That, of course, that's the Alan Thicke Orchestra and the Larissa Juarez Dancers, featuring boy tenor Mike Lucking, asking the musical question, do we switch from global warming to global climate change this week? Yes, Mike, we do. And make sure for you and all everyone else, make sure you go backwards this time, and because that's what happens in autumn. We go backwards. And by the way, for the future, for all of you, remember, we always say, fall back, spring ahead, and always bring a sweater. And, of course, that's, good advice for any kind of giant temperature change. Thank you, Mike. That's a good one. It's a heck of a question. And, by the way, I mentioned Alan Thicke there to start, and Colonel Jeff feels the same way. He passed on just recently, a day or so ago, maybe 2 days ago. And, you know something, folks? I didn't know him. I don't know if we ever met. Maybe we passed somewhere along the way. But everything I've read about him, about Alan Thicke on the internet, all people, and starting with Fred Willard, all people I adore, and people who just loved Alan Thicke, and they were so open about saying, oh, they were sorry that he died so suddenly, And he wasn't an old man. I think he was 70 or something. But he died, as they say, as I've read anyway, he was playing hockey with one of his sons. And he more or less collapsed that way. And it was sort of like, you know, it makes you think of that, one of the great scenes from The Godfather where Marlon Brando, you know, is playing with his grandson there in the garden. And he, you know, and he puts a little piece of the orange in his mouth and, and the son, he chases him around some of the plants there. And then he dies playing with his grandson that way. So, Alan, you know what? So that's dying playing hockey is, as the colonel pointed out, that's probably a very nice Canadian touch on the whole process. And I think so, too. Alan was, everyone seems to have loved Alan Thicke. And I wrote back to Fred Willard that, you know what, I didn't know him, but if you loved him and you and your wife Mary loved him, hey, that's good enough for me. And so onward and upward, Alan. And, I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad where you are now. Alan Thicke, I just want to tell you, wrote also. He was a composer. He wrote the theme to Different Strokes, the television show, and the themes to The Facts of Life, The Joker's Wild, and the original theme of Wheel of Fortune, and many others. So it's always interesting to me, well, how do you like that? That's another how do you like that? One of those when someone does two or three or five things at once, you want to say, get a load of you. That's pretty good. So well done, Alan. And a lot of people love you and have written to say so and express themselves, but I'll bet you know that already. And by the Larry Miller Store and Amazon and PayPal. And boy, oh boy, folks, I'm very proud to talk about the Larry Miller Store and Amazon and PayPal, too. The Larry Miller Store is now open for business, and it features three, count them three, soon-to-be classic T-shirt designs. I love all of these. One is the Larry Miller Drinking Society shirt, featuring the famous LMDS logo, Nominum Quid Geminus, which means you call that a double? I'm sure you've been in bars from time to time where, maybe it's late at night, or maybe it's 10 in the morning, frankly. You're just thinking, you know what? And you order a double and you want to see a double that looks like a double, that feels like a drink, a real man or a real woman can pick up and feel proud of. And I'm sure you haven't gotten it. And you look at that bartender and you've wanted to say from time to time, hey, you call that a double? I ordered a double. And that's a great T-shirt. And the brand new Keep Calm and Larry On shirt. And I love that. It's a great thing. Keep Calm and Larry On. It's based on the what the British used to do during World War II and during the war on Britain and during when the Nazis were coming over every day and then twice a day and more and just bombing everything in London. They killed many, many people. And they had a poster with the crown on it and it had a very official look and it said, keep calm and carry on. And I always thought that was a terrific thing to say. Yes, that's what you should do. Keep calm and carry on. We'll carry on here. And so, at any rate, our T-shirt says, Keep Calm and Larry On. And as the colonel has pointed out, it's not just a mantra for life. It's the motto sensation that's sweeping the nation. I think that's still fun to say, too. And finally, by the way, you know what? Just show how tough you are with the brand new I Survived Volcano Number 2 and All I Got Was This Lousy T-Shirt. Shirt. You know what? And, that's a good one, too. All of our shirts are printed on demand, and that means you can choose, from a variety of colors. And they're available both in gentlemen's and ladies' cut for the T-shirts. And as I've pointed out before, I love using the word gentleman there because it's usually only used on billboards for strip clubs. I don't know if you've noticed that, but yes, it's a gentleman's club. Come by to our gentleman's club. You know, as if the only guys you're going to see in there are David Niven and Winston Churchill. But in any case, we have those cuts. So go to LarryMillerStore.com/store. LarryMillerShow.com/store. And it says on the bottom there, that's LarryMillerShow.com/store. But I'm very proud of it. And Colonel Jeff did a great job putting that all together. And you know what? That's a terrific thing to do to get for gifts. I just realized, you know what? It's a good time of year for gifts. Those are great items to get as gifts. True, it doesn't exactly match up to $1 billion of diamonds. But you know what? What do you need those for anyway? Your wife would rather have one of our T-shirts. Well, maybe not. But you'll never know until you try. And by Amazon, still my favorite company because they do something. They do three things that no other company does in the world. One, they have everything. You know what? You order whatever you want. Order whatever you want and you'll get it. Two, they already have it. It's sitting right there. They don't have to make it. They don't have to order it. They don't have to, you know, borrow it from someone. They've got a zillion of them sitting right there ready for you. And it's in one of those, it's a warehouse, like an Indiana Jones warehouse of, it's a mile long and a mile wide and a mile high and a mile deep. And you know what? And then they do number three, which is the best to me that Amazon does. They send us, here at the Larry Miller Show, they send us a percentage of whatever you order. And that's pretty good for us. So you know what? Whatever it is you order, they send us a percentage. It's always in cash. And we put it right in our steel box, the one where we save all the money for our next big fancy fried chicken dinner with two drinks beforehand in a different place. So you know what? Help yourself. Go to Amazon. You don't have to even go there. You know what? You go to our website. That's how we do it here. You don't have to worry about your laptop or your iPhone or whatever you have. Go to our website, which is LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the mountain? Tom Mix. That's pretty good. I think we might have just terrified our dogs here, but it kind of threw me for a second. That was a pretty good sound. Holy mackerel. Speaking of keep calm and Larry on. That was a good one, Colonel. So do that, please, folks. Go to our website, and there's a banner that says Amazon there. You click that, and we'll take you to Amazon. And you go take a nap on your easy chair, on your big, beautiful, lazy boy chair, and don't worry about it. We'll get you to Amazon, and then you order whatever you want. And, by the way, there's another banner there for PayPal. That's right, one of the best companies in the world. You work with them, you feel like you've saved the world. And who knows, maybe you have. And do that, go back. Remember, that's our website still, LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the mountain? Tom Mix. Still, that sound, boy, that's a low tuba note. Just sounds like even cows and bulls would say, I'm so sorry I've eaten too much grass. But you know what? Do that. Go to our website. And PayPal has a banner too. And instead of saying donate or pay what you like, I always like to say, you know, buy us some drinks. Because there are different levels. Level 1 through 5. All the way up to...
We're driving to Florida!
That made me smile a lot today. Thank you, folks. You know what? Every little bit helps us keep the old leg lamp lit here. And thank you to everyone who has contributed already and is thinking about it and is about to. Really does make a difference and makes us very happy here. And now that brings me to my favorite part of the show, the joke of the week. Yes, and then this is a very serious topic and a very serious joke. I don't know if that phrase exists before I just said it, but it's a very serious joke. In the middle of Afghanistan, a Taliban leader is on the run. He's running through the desert and, whoa, you know, a bunch of people after him, and he is, well, he's scared and he's thrown. And those deserts are really rough. As you may know, wow, that's, you know, that's not just nice sand you walk through on a beach. That's holy mackerel deserts. And he's, well, he's dying of thirst. He's gone so many miles deeper and deeper and deeper into the desert. He doesn't know what to do. And then he sees up ahead, though, he sees someone there in the desert. And he gets closer and closer to that person, and he finally gets up there, and it's an elderly Jewish man selling ties. The guy from the Taliban goes up to him and says, "You know, do you have any water?" And the old Jewish man says, "No, I don't. I'm sorry. And would you like to buy a tie? They're only $5." And the Taliban guy says, "I don't want to buy a tie. What? I'm dying of thirst here. What's wrong with you? I hate you so much." And the tie salesman says, "You know what? Listen, just listen to me now. See, go ahead right in that direction over there, straight where I'm pointing, about 2 miles, and you'll see a beautiful restaurant and a beautiful shop. You'll just see they'll have all the ice water you want. Trust me." And then the guy starts to stagger off that way. He says, he's so mad. He says, I hate you. I'm dying. And he staggers off, and there he goes. And, well, in an hour or two later, he comes back, and he goes right back up to the guy, and he says, "Your brother won't let me in without a tie." We got a kick out of that. We thought that was pretty neat. Wow, it didn't work out for him at all, did it? And that elderly man was just sitting there waiting, and his brother is sitting there waiting too. They have a good system going there. Anyway, that's our joke of the week. I hope you like it. Pass it on. And that brings me to my second favorite part of the show, the Poetry Corner. Oh, that string quartet sounds very peaceful today and very joyous, which is good. This is by the great poet John Greenleaf Whittier, who, by the way, has a poet's name. We've talked about that before, but, you know, if your name is John Greenleaf Whittier, you might as well be a poet. In fact, stop fighting it. But he was a great poet. He's an American poet, and he lived from 1807 to 1892. He was a Quaker and a strong advocate of abolition. And here's something interesting. Unlike most poets, he was very highly regarded in his lifetime as a great poet. That doesn't happen all the time, but it's happened today, and it's happened with this one, and we're glad he wrote it. It's called The Cry of a Lost Soul by John Greenleaf Whittier. In that black forest where, when day is done, with a snake's stillness glides the Amazon, darkly from sunset to the rising sun, a cry as of the pained heart of the wood, the long despairing moan of solitude and darkness and the absence of all good, startles the traveler with a sound so drear, so full of hopeless agony and fear, his heart stands still and listens, like his ear. The guide, as if he heard a dead bell toll, starts, drops his oar against the gunwale's thole, crosses himself and whispers, "A lost soul." "No, senor, not a bird. I know it well. It is the pained soul of some infidel or cursed heretic that cries from hell." Poor fool, with hope still mocking his despair, he wanders, shrieking on the midnight air for human pity and for Christian prayer. "Saints, strike him dumb. Our Holy Mother hath no prey for him who, sinning unto death, burns always in the furnace of God's wrath." Thus to the baptized pagan's cruel lie, lending new horror to that mournful cry, the voyager listens, making no reply. Dim bursts the boat lamp, shadows deepen round, from giant trees with snake-like creepers wound, and the black water glides without a sound. But in the traveler's heart a secret sense of nature, plastic to benign intents, and an eternal good in providence, lifts to the starry calm of heaven his eyes, and two rebuilding all earth's ominous cries, the cross of pardon lights the tropic skies. "Father of all," he urges his strong plea, "thou lovest all. Thy erring child may be lost to himself, but never lost to thee. All souls are thine, the wings of morning bear, none from that presence which is everywhere, nor hell itself can hide, for thou art there. Through sins of sense, perversities of will, through doubt and pain, through guilt and shame and ill, thy pitying eye is on thy creature still. Wilt thou not make eternal source and goal in thy long years life's broken circle whole, and change to praise the cry of a lost soul?" Well, that's pretty good. That John Greenleaf Whittier was a poet. A good one, too. I hope you like that one, folks. Boy, it kind of shook us up here. And the dogs went back to sleep, by the way. So I think that's a people poem. And that brings me to my third favorite part of the show. MMM. The triple M. Magic movie moment. Oh, boy, and that great piano note I love. Yes, this is a good one, folks. A movie I love. The Song of Bernadette, made in 1945, directed by Henry King, starring Charles Bickford, Vincent Price, Gladys Cooper, and the great Jennifer Jones as Bernadette. It's a great movie, folks. If you've never seen it, please do. You'll love it, too. And if you've seen it like me, if you've seen it 25 times, see it again. Boy, oh boy, she was so good in this, Jennifer Jones. And by the way, so good that every moment of her is moving and godly. It's a very good movie. And by the way, she's gorgeous, and everyone in that movie is a wonderful actor. All of them, the men and women, oh boy. It really moves you and makes you interested. And the magic movie moment for me today in The Song of Bernadette is that in her town, in her village, where she first discovers the vision that, well, make it Lourdes in France, where so many miracles occurred. And boy, though, in that town, she comes from a poor family and with her father and her sisters and her brothers. But all the men who run things in that town are so bad as the movie goes on and on, you want to yell through the screen, stop, please stop, don't hurt this good woman, don't hurt this holy woman, and don't hurt yourselves by doing it. It's wonderful how bad they are, and it's so obvious to you and to me, and it's as part of the movie, as the story goes along, and I don't want to spoil anything for you, but as it moves, as it goes along, well, ultimately, Lourdes is discovered by this young girl and created and followed. And it's a great movie, but along the way, just seeing the mayor and the chief of police and the head of the mental institution and someone else who writes this or that, and you know what, just seeing them plotting against her and making things, well, horrible plans just to undermine her, to ruin her. And that alone makes this beautiful movie, and it is beautiful start to finish. That makes their behavior a magic movie moment. Oh, all these bad guys. You know what, folks? See it sometime. The Song of Bernadette, 1945. And you know what? You can't, because the truth is, folks, you can't, if you're in a war, she was in a war fighting these guys, but she didn't know it. She was such a good soul. And seeing everyone change, and those who come along with her. You know, my wife and I got a text letter from our son, the Marine, who's, he's in a war, too. He's in the Middle East. And, well, it made my whole day. It came early, especially here on Milleronia, because Milleronia is several hours earlier than where we live in Southern California normally. But, boy, I wouldn't change a thing. You know what? It made my whole day to get that text from him. You know, and he wrote a long letter, too, and it was just great. Oh, my wife and I were just smiling ear to ear. And I woke up our other son also to tell him about it, and I had to take him to school that day. Yes, we not only have schools on Milleronia, but we have parents who take their kids. But boy, that letter was great. That letter was great, a good Marine letter, and he was always talking about what they're doing, but he can't say. He said, well, I can't tell you where this is because it's under OPSEC, which is spelled OPSEC. And I said to my wife and to my other son, I said, I think that stands for operational security, OPSEC. You know, it has that great military sound to it that, well, I don't know. I mean, the colonel said, I think you're right. But I said, how do I know? All I know is with, you know, some of the paperback books I get in airports. And I think they've been using for the last 10 or 15 years, things like OPSEC. You know, I thought that was pretty cool in the car on the way to school with my other son. In fact, I told the colonel, I may be saying OPSEC for about a year now. I just thought it was so cool to hear. But, you know, we wonder sometimes, what's the future going to bring, folks, with all these awful people and terrible wars? You know, that I know that there's this big thing in the news now, but oh boy, the Russians were hacking our computers and the military and politically. I have no idea what's going on there, and I'm not going to talk about that, by the way, because it just follows my normal desire. Boy, you got me. You know what? If you wanted to go to a lecture on it, that's fine. I might go with you. But boy, I'll tell you what, that Vladimir Putin, I'll tell you one thing about him, and I did want to just say this about him, because I think it's true. He, if you ever wanted to get a feeling for him, what's this guy like? Just look at him. Putin just wears it on his face. As the colonel said, you know, holy mackerel. You look at that face and you think, oh, this is not good. And he was, by the way, you may know that this is the truth, that he was a member of the KGB. And they weren't kidding around in that outfit. And plus, he was the head of interrogations. He was a colonel. And I could be wrong, but I don't think I am on this. If you were in a room waiting to be interrogated and the door opened and he walked in, what would you think then? You know, you'd look at that face and you'd think, oh, this is not good. You know, and you just know that even if I tell him everything he wants to know, that's not why he's walking in the room. He's walking in the room because he loves it and because he's really, really good at it. And it doesn't matter what you tell him. You'll tell him whatever he wants, but he's gonna beat you till it's no fun for him anymore. And it's always fun for him. That's the thing about that face. You just look at that and think, he's not kidding. He loves that job, and he likes walking in that room just to see your face go, oh, no, this is very bad for me. And it would be, you know, it would be because we don't know in our politics, which are certainly, I guess, a bit crazy here and there, but whoever you like, you dislike, whether Bush, Obama, Clinton, Grover Cleveland, anyone, it doesn't matter. Some were crazy and all our presidents and some were crooked. But even the really bad ones were like a tea party compared to Vladimir Putin. I mean, let's be honest. On Judgment Day, even God's going to say to Putin, well, hi, can I get you some vodka, anything at all? Even God's going to think, I got to get this guy out of here right now because that face is too hard to look at. God could think, I made that face and I still don't like it. So, you know what, though? That's a kind of reality I don't think I understand. In fact, I'm sure I don't. That's one of the reasons I don't like reality shows. I'm glad they're on, and whatever people like is fine with me, but I don't like reality shows because, first of all, it's not my reality. It's theirs. And the only thing they're good at is being awful people. I think that's the way they really gin them up, so to speak. That plus reality shows, it's not reality. It's cooked and staged and scripted and false. It's untrue. You know, you see the bartenders and waitresses on the cruise yacht spend 20 minutes talking about whether or not the cook should get a tattoo. Now, all right, that's fine. If you like that's okay, fine with me, but I can always leave the room. If it's on around 11:30 at night, I want to say to my wife, hey, you know what, how about if we just turn on, you know, a ball game or something, you know, but she likes them, so it's fine with me. And I don't know whether that cook should get a tattoo or not. But that's why, especially coming up to today, to next week, the week after, well, we always say things like the holiday season for the end of the year. But you know what? It's mainly about Christmas time. And we know it's Christmas time because of Christmas cards. I was just wondering that this morning, and I was talking to the Colonel. Does anybody still send them? Anybody still send Christmas cards? Because it takes a lot of work, and I don't mean just the stamps. I think, you know, just the existence of these things. Christmas cards are so annoying, they even hate them in heaven. And I think you know who I mean. They don't get bigger than that in heaven. Yes, him. So, you know what? I'll be honest, I love getting Christmas cards or the Christmas letters that some old friends from school, you know, send in with about their family's progress and what's going on. And I really love getting them. They put a nice photo on it or a couple of them. But I haven't given that back and I feel bad about it. And I thank you for sending yours. It means a lot to me. And is that just laziness or stupidity that I don't send them back? Could I? Should I? By the way, some people make their Christmas cards too early. The Colonel and I agree on that. In fact, it's insulting. I mean, Colonel Jeff takes it personally. These early folks, if you think about it, they start making theirs in October. They have to because of all the to make a product like that and to fill it out and fill it in and get it in the envelopes, and because it's in your mailbox just after Thanksgiving. I mean, that's how we just jam these things in, you know that. But I was wondering about that because there are no cards for any other holiday. Are there? I was asking the colonel about that. He thought maybe Valentine's Day, but there's no occasion where you send a giant net, a broadcast of cards, just dozens, hundreds, thousands of cards. I mean, even other really important holidays. Shouldn't we all send something on Memorial Day? Those soldiers died in battle. Veterans Day, Armistice Day, July 4th. I mean, these are big things, but nothing. No, we don't have just Christmas cards. There are no Hanukkah cards. I'm sure there are a couple out there, but, you know, nothing for Kwanzaa. I just wanted to mention that. I still don't even know what Kwanzaa is, by the way, but if they have cards, again, who wants one? Even Bob Kwanzaa doesn't like them, and you could come up to him. He could be interviewed, and they could say to him, but Mr. Kwanzaa, that's your holiday. You invented it. You started the whole thing, and it's named after you. And he still doesn't care. I want cards. Have you seen those cards? I don't like them. But what about the events we have? I was wondering about office Christmas parties. Do they still have them anywhere? Are couples still making out on a pile of winter coats? Which is, I think I did that once, by the way. I mean, I'm not just being coy here. If you meet someone you really, really like and she really, really likes you and you're both, drunk and you're at an office Christmas party, you know, could you just, go into someone's bedroom there or a part of the office where everyone piled their coats on a bed? Well, it's still just saying it out loud like that. Still sounds pretty good to me. You can, no, just move your elbow, but other than that, we're fine. I was, Christmas parties used to be fun. Do they still happen? I was in the cast of a sitcom on NBC that only lasted a season, but we had a Christmas episode, which I guess that's a show business tradition. So you got to have a Christmas episode. It was a sitcom, and it was a pretty involved episode too, with gifts and a tree and a plot line involving someone having a Christmas party or something. But the week we were shooting, I noticed, and I was the only one who noticed, by the way, that the whole cast and all the writers and all the producers were Jewish. Everyone. I mean, the caterers, makeup people, wardrobe, all Jews. I think you had to go down to one of the car parkers to find someone who celebrated Christmas. But there we were in our TV family with bright green and red sweaters singing under a tree and having a Christmas show. No one else seemed to notice it. I would whisper along the way, does this make any sense to anybody here? Why are we doing this? And we shot it in October to have enough time for editing and promo. Again, that's fine with me, but isn't it a little bit crazy? Everyone in the entire building was Jewish. Shouldn't we have just shot it in Israel? They couldn't have looked much more Jewish than we did. If that's the way we're going, shouldn't the 700 Club do a tribute to Hanukkah? Would they feel weird? No, that's just, I guess that's show business. And you know what, though? I wouldn't change it for the world, and I'll tell you why. A Charlie Brown Christmas is one of the greatest shows that's ever been on television. It's so touching and so sweet and so meaningful. It's still as good today as it was the day it came out. And that's a deeply religious show, too. It's part of why it's so good. I know you feel the same way, a Charlie Brown Christmas. Just having a Charlie Brown Christmas on the shelf and on the air is worth all the knuckleheaded things that came from it. That Christmas show is so good, I would have played any part on it with a big smile and a tear in my eye. Hey, well, at least so far I haven't had to play Santa. That would, I don't think Santa wants that. I don't think anybody needs that. Who's playing Santa? Zero Mostel? Well, I know what I want and I know what I like. And so do you. Folks, we know the same things. Homer is Homer, and Pluto is a planet. And so, even at holiday time, remember, as always...
If you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. And that's the truth, no matter what you celebrate. Be well, and we'll see you here next time.